Hi there, welcome to Live from Studio F. I'm Brian Moline, and we're joined today by the Jupiter String Quartet, the quartet in residence at the University of Illinois, starting their fifth year in residence here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. The group is Liz Freivogel on violin. Liz, hello.
Hi.
Or viola, I'm
viola.
Sorry.
That's
viola.
Fine.
I should
hello.
Know that by now. Meg Freivogel on violin.
Hi.
Nelson Lee on violin.
Hi.
And Daniel McDonough on cello.
Hi.
And as you might guess by the shared last names, this is a family affair. Meg and Liz are sisters, and Daniel is Meg's husband. And Nelson, you're almost like a member of the family. You guys have been playing together for so long.
Yeah, pretty much. We always joke that I see these guys way more than I see my own family, pretty much.
Very good. Well, we're going to hear some great music from the Jupiter String Quartet here in just a couple of minutes. We'll hear some Beethoven and some Dvorak. They'll be playing at the Allerton Music Barn Festival on Thursday, September 22nd. But before we get into the music, just a little discussion about how the group all got started. And Meg and Liz, I'll start with you. Sounds like music was a big part of your family growing up in the Washington, D.C. area. Is that right?
Yeah, we lived for a while in Bethesda, Maryland. And that's where we started our chamber music. We had a family quartet that started with a great cellist, Oliver Edel. And he really lit a spark, I think, within us. And it's always been a fun, positive thing for us in our lives. And we have been playing together in this quartet for 15 years now. And our younger brother actually is also a quartet musician. So it was a really powerful start, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and Liz, I imagine rehearsals, when you're talking about an all-family quartet, I imagine those could get a little interesting at times.
Yeah, they got a little messy sometimes, especially considering our older brother was in high school when the younger one was in early elementary school, I think. And so the older brother always wanted to play really complicated things, and sometimes the younger brother was not quite ready for that. His feet couldn't even reach the floor, you know. So
there was a Beethoven Opus 132 moment where it was around lunchtime, which is a bad time to rehearse anyway. Mm-hmm. And the second violinist, who was our younger brother, just couldn't get this offbeat rhythm, and he called a timeout very dramatically and said, "I just have to eat some lunch."
Oh, wonderful. We're glad to have you here today. We're going to hear some wonderful music from the Jupiter String Quartet. I think we'll be starting off with some Beethoven, mm-hmm. One of the movements from the Quartet Number 5. Whenever you guys mm-hmm. are ready.
Yeah, this is Opus 18, Number 5. Thank you.
Beethoven String Quartet, Opus 18, Number 5, first movement. Very nice. Very nice indeed. Daniel, let me ask you, what stands out about this Beethoven quartet, this particular one for you?
Well, this in a way, it's the most Mozartian of the early Beethoven quartets. In fact, he was looking at K464 of Mozart, which is Mozart's A major quartet, as his model. So there's something kind of elegant. Of course, it has Beethoven's fire in it still, but of all the early Beethoven quartets, this one seems to look most towards his teachers. What he did was he went and he was supposed to receive the spirit of Mozart through the hands of Haydn. So, of course, he couldn't study with Mozart because Mozart unfortunately died so young. Mm-hmm. But he was able to learn a lot about Mozart from looking at his scores and from studying with Haydn.
Yeah, very nice. Of course, you're in residence here on the University of Illinois campus, and I think for those of us outside the music department, we might not know exactly what that entails. I don't know that there's probably a typical day for you necessarily, but Nelson, give us an overview, maybe a typical semester for the Jupiter String Quartet here on campus.
Sure. Well, our position here is kind of like a twofold position in which we are involved teaching in the School of Music. We all have private students, and the majority of our time is spent with our private students in one-on-one instruction, 1 hour a week usually with each student. And we also run the chamber music program, so we put the students who are interested in groups such as trios and quartets, and we coach most of those groups along with the other string faculty members. And then the other aspect of our job is the performance aspect. We get to perform 3 times in the Krannert Center, which is a great opportunity for us, and then we also have flexibility to keep touring as much as we need around the country and sometimes abroad. So yeah. We love it here. It's a really nice position.
Yeah, very good. And just kind of back to how the group formed, I believe you said 15 years ago. Meg, as I understand it, you, Nelson, and Daniel are all together at the Cleveland Institute of Music. And you know, Sister Liz was at Oberlin, which isn't too far away from Cleveland, also in Ohio. But How did the three of you come together, and then come to add Liz to the group as well?
Yeah, well, there's a great chamber music program at the Cleveland Institute of Music, and Daniel, Nelson, and I were all involved in that. Although we weren't playing together in school, we had kind of matched up in different pairs at Tao School of Music, which is a summer festival. So we knew that we liked working with each other, but the quartet really came together at a moment when we were graduating and trying to figure out what next. And so what we really wanted to do was make a recording and study at Yellow Barn Music Festival as a quartet. And that was sort of our first goal. I think it was in January of 2000 or 2001. Mm-hmm. We got together and we worked really, really hard to make this kind of demo tape, and we got to study there. And, you know, one thing led to another. I don't think that this would be our job for so long, but we feel very lucky to be doing this, and we're happy where we are.
Yeah. So Liz, from your perspective, you know, studying at Oberlin, maybe how was your course of study? Was it a little different than the other three, or how would you describe it?
Slightly. I did a double degree there, so I was also doing an English degree. So it wasn't quite as concentrated only in music, although there's a conservatory there that's similar. I was always a little jealous of the chamber music program at CIM, and so I would sometimes go in to watch the concerts because chamber music was always my favorite thing. So in the summertime, Meg and I would usually together attend chamber music festivals even before we were a quartet, and that's sort of what drew us together, yeah.
All right, very good. Well, glad you're with us here today, and you've got another piece to play for us, a movement from Dvorak's opus, string quartet number 10. I'm not sure the opus number on that, but the string quartet number 10 in E flat, and we're going to hear the second movement of that today. Thank you. Very nice. The second movement of Dvorak's String Quartet number 10 in E flat, and very nice contrast to the Beethoven.
Yeah.
Dvorak, of course, very well known for using lots of folk melodies in his music, and this quartet, known as the Sylvanic Quartet, this may be one of the better examples of that, especially in his chamber music. Meg, when you're playing this particular piece of music, what really stands out for you?
Well, especially this movement, it feels just so soulful. And there's sort of a comfort to the repetitive nature of it. And I think just finding a new way of saying the same thing each time is a really challenging thing to do, but also an inspired way of being able to perform the music. So that's something that always strikes me when I play this movement.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything to add to that?
The subtitle is Dumka, which was a specific kind of piece. It's supposed to be, it's subtitled Elegy, but it's kind of, it's supposed to be this long ballad and with contrasting parts, which I'm sure you heard, in a faster tempo. But basically, it's as if someone's telling this long, sad story, and in the middle of it, there's some relief. So, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Well, let's talk a little bit about the program, of course, playing the two quartets that we've heard portions of today. We'll also hear at your performance at Allerton a piece by Joan Tower called Rising for Flute and String Quartet. Daniel, tell us a little bit about this piece. What will stand out to listeners that hear that at Allerton next week?
This is a new piece for us. We performed it once this summer. We've known Joan's music for a long time. She's one of the great American composers living today. And we got to play it for her, actually, over the summer. We were up in Maine at a music festival, and we actually played it with one of the fellowship students there, which was quite fun. As you might expect, the flute part in this flute quintet is very soloistic. So there's a lot of work for Jonathan Keeble, our colleague, who's going to play it with us. We're very excited to have him join us. But Joan's music is very rhythmically driven in and very exciting. The title Rising, I think she's playing with these ideas of these scales that go up and up and up, and then what happens at the top, they have to kind of find their way back down. She's very fascinated with the way the natural world and music kind of correspond. So I think you can hear a little bit of that in the way she writes this piece.
I think also worth mentioning is she told us that Beethoven is one of her biggest influences, if not the biggest one. And I realized after we made the program, she also told us she never likes to be programmed right after Beethoven. And we did exactly that. So we just will keep that a secret.
I won't tell her if you don't.
Don't tell her.
Let's talk a little bit about the venue, the Allerton Music Barn, of course, out at Allerton Park near Monticello. Nelson, for you, I believe you guys have played there before.
Yeah, a couple times.
What stands out about the venue for you?
Well, it's a really wonderful space in that you're indoors, but you also feel like you're kind of outside at the same time. And it's also a perfect size for chamber music. I think it seats about 220 people or something like that. So for our group, it's a really nice, intimate venue. And especially, I think, around this time of year when you want to kind of enjoy the last bits of warm weather, it's a nice experience to hear music in an outdoor setting, and we're keeping our fingers crossed about the weather.
But Liz, then it looks like coming up in October, you'll have a chance to play in Krannert Center. It looks like a nice program you've got coming up with Nathan and Julie Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that concert coming up.
Well, it's a lot of different types of collaborations between the. We'll have Julie Gunn on piano, Nathan Gunn obviously singing, and so different groupings with that. We are going to play this piece by Mark Adamo, which was actually written for us a few years ago, and that's with voice. It's an amazing piece based on a Billy Collins poem called Aristotle. And so that's one of the things on the piece. Let's see. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the idea behind the program is that this Aristotle piece or the text of the poem talks about the beginning, the middle, and the end of life. Mm-hmm. So that Aristotle piece by Mark Adamo opens the program. And then the rest of the program sort of tries to follow that same arc through a lot of different pieces. So it'll start with some more carefree, youthful music. It'll find itself in kind of a midlife crisis in the middle, and then some kind of resolution towards the end. In fact, we're playing another piece by Joan Tower on that program, which is a string quartet called In Memory. So that's the middle, the heart of that program that has a lot of... it's the most furious work on the program with Nathan and Julie.
Yeah. I'm always curious on something like this with you and Nathan and Julie trying to get all of your schedules to work together and actually putting together a concert like this. Meg, tell us a little bit about the rehearsal process, how you're able to find time with everything else you're doing.
Our quartet rehearses every morning from 9 to 12. So I think they're going to come at 10 because it's probably too early to sing at 9.
Yeah.
We just find time here and there. We have to do some quartet work before we collaborate. Mm-hmm. Just as if we're putting quartet together, we have to do individual work. So as much as we can know our part so that we can really listen to each other in rehearsal is the best. But we have some time and we'll just let these pieces simmer a little bit over the next few weeks. And we're very excited to collaborate with them.
Yeah, it should be a wonderful concert. That's coming up on October 20th at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Center, the Jupiter String Quartet with Nathan and Julie Gunn. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for today on this edition of Live from Studio F. But thanks to all four of you, Liz Freivogel, Meg Freivogel, Nelson Lee, Daniel McDonough. Thank you very much for sharing your time and talents with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to this edition of Live from Studio F. I'm Brian Moline, the host and producer of this podcast. Jason Croft is our technical director. Thank you so much for tuning in today.